30 issues in 30 days, issue 12, Social Security and Medicare in the post-financial crisis world. Obama and McCain, as I mentioned before the news, are pretty different on shoring up Social Security. One would raise taxes, for example. The other would start to privatize. We'll sort it out and go through the various Social Security fixes that each of them advocate as we go along this hour. And we'll ask if the Social Security and Medicare debates need to change in light of the financial crisis. But we want to start this edition of 30 Issues in 30 Days by just taking a look at that Social Security statement that every working American gets in the mail every year. I guess everybody gets it, your Social Security statement. Have you gotten it? And with a little guide to what this means and what it might not actually mean that it says is Peter Diamond, professor of economics at MIT and author with Peter Orszag of Saving Social Security, A Balanced Approach, published by the Brookings Institution Press back in 2003. Peter Diamond, welcome back to WNYC. Thank you for doing this with us.
Thank you for having me.
So I think this is a common thing that people go through every year. They get this thing in the mail. And it says, for example, reading from a sample form here, it says you have earned enough credits to qualify for benefits. Yay. At your current earnings rate, if you stop working and start receiving benefits at age 62, your payment would be about $1,018 a month on this sample form. If you continue working until your full retirement age, 67 years, your payment would be about $1,476 a month. And at age 70, your payment would be about $1,840. So up $400 a month for this person if they wait from 62 to 67, up another $400 a month if they wait from 67 to 70 to retire. And then it goes on to give some information about disability credits as well, which we'll skip for now. Are those numbers real?
Yes, they're the projection under current law of what would happen for a worker who in the future has the earnings that are built into the assumption, because your benefits depend on your full history of earnings. And obviously for anyone not yet retired, the full history is partially ahead of them.
So when we see that number, you would get X dollars a month. That's if we stop working today for whatever reason, but then waited until age 62 or 67.
No, it's not calculated that way.
Uh-huh.
It assumes you go on working till, in the three examples, 62, 67, and 70,
uh-huh.
And it assumes that you go on earning at the same rate that on average you've earned to date.
Really? So that's a projected benefit.
That's a projected benefit.
Assuming your lifetime average earnings continue until age 62 plus.
Right.
Interesting. How is the money calculated? Is it a percentage of all the money we've earned in our lives, our Social Security benefit, or some other more complicated formula?
It's more complicated, but I think not too complicated to quickly run through. The first step is they don't count your earnings year by year in the dollars of the years in which you earned them, but they project everything earlier than that up to the year in which you turn 60. So it's as if you're making an adjustment. They do the adjustment with average wage growth, so it's looking at where you fit in the average wage distribution that year. Then they don't look at all of your earnings history, but they take the best 35 years, and they do that. So if you had a bad spell, a couple of years of unemployment, that's not going to kill your retirement benefit. And then they feed the average of those 35 years into a formula, which is a progressive formula. It gives a larger benefit relative to earnings for low earners than for high earners. And that's what they call your primary insurance amount, and that would be your benefit if you retire at your age for full benefits, which in the example you offered us was 67. If you retire earlier than that, they reduce it. If you retire later than that, they increase it. So there are three steps in this process. Adjust your earnings level, plug it into a formula, adjust it for when you retire.
Now, the debate over privatizing Social Security revolves partly around the extra risk that we might put our retirement money at in private investment. These last few weeks are certainly exhibit A if someone wants to argue against that risk. But what does the government invest Social Security money in now?
The trust fund, which is very large, over $2 trillion, is invested in government bonds. They're special issue government bonds that are actually a bit nicer than anything available to you and me. They pay a market interest rate, and the Social Security Administration, if it needs the money, could turn them into the Treasury at face, even if they've declined in value. So they're a bit more protected than if we just bought a 10 or 20 or 30-year bond on the market ourselves.
Will the current financial crisis or any other projected solvency or financial health of Social Security affect anything that we see on these statements that come in year by year?
The effect of the economy on Social Security comes through three routes. One, it may affect the interest rates on government bonds. If the economy gets bad enough and foreigners stop trusting U.S. to pay on these bonds, that those interest rates could go up because they want a risk premium. I don't expect that to happen. The second thing is when we go into a recession, workers get laid off, they stop paying payroll taxes, so there's a drop in revenue. And then the third thing that happens is older workers who get laid off tend to retire and start collecting benefits, so benefit costs go up. Those latter two effects in the long run get offset because, as your example showed, you take benefits earlier, they're smaller, so the government catches up on having paid you earlier. And similarly, if you're unemployed and not paying payroll taxes, then eventually your benefit will be smaller than if you had higher earnings, because the U.S., unlike some other countries, doesn't give you credit at a time when you're unemployed. In some countries, in addition to getting unemployment benefits in cash, you get credits that will boost your retirement benefits as if your unemployment benefits were being earned and subject to tax. But we don't do that. So the drop in revenue gets offset by an eventual drop in payments.
So before we bring on advocates for the two presidential candidates' positions, when we get these statements in the mail and we see these numbers and project on out, assuming our average earnings continue to be what we earn, can we really rely on those numbers? Or is it possible, and some politicians have said this to me, is it possible that these numbers are projections based on the current financial state of the federal government? Politics may intervene yet. Let's say if you're not over 50 or 55 years old, politics may intervene yet and say, no, America can't afford anymore. The Social Security system can't afford anymore to give you to promise you that much money when you retire at 62 or 67 or 70. We're going to have to adjust that downward to correct for, you know, for the real ability to pay. Is that a possibility that either economics or politics would intrude on the reality of that number on our statement, depending on our age?
Absolutely. And on the statement just below the numbers you read off at the start is in bright, bold letters, your estimated benefits are based on current law. Congress has made changes to the law in the past and can do so at any time, and pointing out particularly since, as everybody knows, the projection of Social Security is that there isn't enough revenue to pay all of the benefits in the law through the 75 years they normally look at. Sure. Now, some people have referred to that as the trust fund going bust, broke, bankrupt, which is ignoring the fact that, of course, the payroll tax revenues continue rolling in and can be used to cover most of the benefits in current law, although not all of them.
And you're right. I never actually noticed this before. There's that asterisk. It's like the fine print at the bottom of the car leasing agreement. It says your estimated benefits are based on current law. Congress has made changes to the law in the past and can do so anytime, just as you quoted it. Then it goes on to say the law governing benefit amounts may change because by 2041, the payroll taxes collected will be enough to pay only about 78% of the scheduled benefits. So somebody in the government put that particular projection of the solvency of Social Security right on our statements.
Right.
And that's where we will end it with Peter Diamond, professor of economics at MIT and author with Peter Orszag of Saving Social Security, A Balanced Approach, published by the Brookings Institution Press in 2003. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
So what will the politicians do? How meaningful will that number on your statement actually be? How differently would Obama and McCain approach this, and how different might they have to as a result of the financial crisis? We will talk with someone who's more McCain-y and someone who's more Obama-y right after this. Issues in 30 days, our presidential election series. Issue 12 today, Obama, McCain, Social Security, and Medicare. And by the way, as part of our 30 Issues in 30 Days presidential election series, we have a 30 Issues Wiki. It's not just a comments page. It's a way for you to collaborate with each other to help produce six of our 30 Issues programs, suggest guests and questions and audio clips and more. Our current Wiki is on the topic of oil, coal, and alternative energy. We'll be doing that program on Friday. Check out the 30 Issues Wiki and contribute to it at wnyc.org/30issues. Now, on Social Security, Barack Obama and John McCain both appeared last month at the AARP's Life at 50 conference. Here is about a minute of Senator Obama talking about how he would raise taxes to save Social Security.
Right now, the Social Security payroll tax is capped. That means most middle-class families pay this tax on every dime that they make, while millionaires and billionaires only pay it on a tiny percentage of their income. And that's why I'll work with both members of Congress. That's why I'll work with both members of Congress from both parties to ask people making more than $250,000 a year to contribute a little bit more to keep the system sound. It's a change that will start. It's a change that would start a decade or more from now, and it wouldn't burden middle-class families. In fact, 99% of Americans would see absolutely no change in their taxes, 99%. Now, even if we keep Social Security strong for future generations, it's still not enough to help seniors on fixed incomes who are struggling with the rising cost of everything from gas to groceries. And that's why I'll make retirement more secure by eliminating income taxes for retirees making less than $50,000 per year, which would completely eliminate income taxes for 7 million seniors.
All right, Barack Obama from the AARP Life at 50 conference last month. Here's about a minute of Senator McCain.
I know who I've got to work with in Washington, and I understand who I work for. And I don't work for a party. I don't work for a special interest. I don't work for myself. I work for you. And I'll fight for you. For those who lost their real estate investments in the bad housing market or have to work three jobs to pay the bills, for those who don't have access to quality health care and face a future that is less bright than it should be, I'm committed to protecting and preserving Social Security. I will protect and preserve it, and I won't hand it off to an unluckier generation, a system that's broken. I promise you that. and we're going to fix it. And we're going to make the case to the American people that Republicans and Democrats have to sit down together and reach across the aisle together and fix this system.
So less specific was Senator McCain than Senator Obama at the AARP conference last month, but emphasizing the bipartisanship need. And he has come up with some specifics in the past, and we'll talk about them now with Mike Tanner, senior fellow at the Cato Institute, author of Leviathan on the Right, How Big Government Conservatism Brought Down the Republican Revolution, and Mark Weisbrot, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Mark is the more Obama-y one, and Mike is the more McCain-y one. Thank you both very much for coming on with us.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Now, I would say that a few various remedies are usually kicked around for the short term and the long term with respect to Social Security. And either of you tell me if you think this list is too short. Raising the retirement age so people start in the program later in life, that would save money. Raising the Social Security payroll tax to help cover the gap, as Senator Obama was proposing there. Lowering the basic benefit. Or privatizing part of Social Security to have younger workers start investing the money themselves. Mike Tanner, what am I leaving out?
No, that's pretty much it. I mean, if you have a situation in which you have more money going out than you have coming in, your options are pretty limited. You can bring in more money by raising taxes. You can reduce the amount going out by cutting benefits. Or you can try to get a higher return on the money within the system by investing privately. That's about the entire range of options.
Mark Weisbrot, fair enough?
Yeah, but it's just the problem is too small to be worrying about. I mean, it's 40 years away, and we don't really know that much about what the world is going to look like 40 years from now. So even if we don't do anything at all with Social Security, according to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, it's going to be pay all promised benefits, which is increasing benefits every year, for the next 40 years. And to make it, pay the promised benefits indefinitely would require minor changes. In fact, changes that are less than we did in the 1950s, changes are less than we did in the 1960s, 70s, and 80s.
But let me follow up, because in our last segment with our previous guest, we read the actual wording that comes on our actual Social Security statements now that says your estimated benefits can be changed by Congress. The law governing benefit amounts may change because by 2041, the payroll taxes collected will be enough to pay only about 78% of scheduled benefits. Mark, that's the official statement that we get from the Social Security Administration.
Well, that's designed actually to mislead you in a way, because while that's literally true, that's not going to happen. And notice, by the way, what they didn't tell you is even that 78% is a higher real benefit than what people are receiving today. But in any case, we'd want to receive the full promised benefit, which, as I said, increases every year. And what they don't tell you is that sometime between now and 2041, we're going to make the necessary changes. And like I said, we made bigger changes in the 50s, in the 60s, in the 70s, and in the 80s. And you didn't see anybody in the streets,
right.
And you didn't see anybody talking about the government going bankrupt.
So if this is
just really small, even 0.75% of GDP.
Let me stay with you for one more question. If you're right, and this is a fiction, ginned up by special interests to scare us into doing things like privatizing part of Social Security. That's your position. Does Barack Obama share that view? Has he articulated that view to the best of your knowledge?
Well, I don't think he's taken a close enough look at it yet. I mean, there's nothing really wrong with what he's proposing. It's just that it really shouldn't be discussed right now because there's just, we have so many other problems that are so much more immediate. I mean, something that's a small problem that's going to be fixed. Look, all that's going on here is that people are living longer, and this has been going on for a long time. That's why
that's a big deal, isn't it?
To raise the payroll tax in the 50s, in the 60s, and the 70s, and the 80s.
All right.
And we'll either raise it or we'll do what Obama wants to do, which is fine. But it's, the main thing is to first let the public have an understanding of just how trivial this is, because there's an urban legend out there. I mean, majority of people under 50 think that they're not even going to see their benefits, which is absolutely ridiculous.
All right, let me get Mike Tanner's view on this. Urban legend?
Get some benefits. As long as someone is paying into the system, people will get some benefits, but they won't, and by the time young people today retire, they won't get the level of benefits they're receiving now, or they'll be paying much higher taxes over the course of their lifetime to preserve those benefits, giving them a much lower rate of return. But I would suggest that the problem is not in 2040 when the trust fund runs out. The fact is in 2017, which is just 9 years from now, Social Security is going to begin to run a deficit. Now, in theory, of course, we'll go back to that Social Security trust fund, and we'll use that to pay the benefits. But in order to redeem the trust fund, the government is going to have to come up with trillions of dollars. Given what's been going on recently, I haven't noticed trillions of dollars laying around. I mean, any attempt to continue to pay those benefits is going to require higher taxes from working people.
So I don't want to go round and round between the two of you on how bad the problem is. I think your differences there are clear. Let me go down some of those solutions and see where both Obama and McCain stand as far as you know. Mike Tanner from Cato, you're our more McCain-y person here, just so people keep knowing the context. Raising the retirement age so people start the program later in life. Has McCain spoken positively about that idea?
He has at various times and then also backed away from it at various times. McCain, in words of one of his advisors, wants to practice purposeful ambiguity on the question of Social Security. I think it's more ambiguous than it is purposeful. But his position in general has sort of been all of the above, that he would be willing to consider pretty much any option on the table at one time or another.
But we heard Obama being very specific about raising the payroll tax. That is, currently when we pay Social Security taxes, that part of our income tax or that addition to additional kind of income tax stops at about $100,000 a year. Then he would have it not continue until we make more than $250,000 a year, and then have it kick in again for people at that high earning level to help finance the system.
Yeah.
Has McCain come out specifically against that as an Obama tax?
He has criticized Obama for that, but then at other times he has said that he would be open to some sort of tax increase for Social Security as well. So he has sort of contradicted himself on that. I would point out that Obama's plan does not come anywhere near restoring Social Security to solvency. It would at best get us 3 to 4 years of additional cash flow solvency, moving that 2017 date to perhaps 2020 or 2021. And in exchange for that, we would have the highest marginal tax rates in the world, higher than Sweden's. So it seems like a lot of pain for very little gain.
So the biggest fundamental difference between you two continues to be how big the problem is. Let me finish the list. Lowering the basic benefit or lowering the annual cost of living increases that retirees get. Is McCain for that?
He has spoken positively about that in the past and has pretty much made it clear that some form of benefit restraint would be part of his final proposal.
And that would be that would be new. I mean, he did come on this show, and we're actually looking for the clip right now. I think it was at the 2004 Republican convention, and said that that number on our Social Security statement every year, our promised benefit, is really fiction. And he thinks it's going to be lower than what people are seeing today, especially people of a certain age. I think everybody tries to say if you're over 50 or 55 right now, don't worry, those numbers are going to be real, but that the government may have to adjust for younger people. So McCain's in that camp, right?
That's right. He's saying that the revenue that's coming in is not sufficient to pay the promised benefits in the future. You could try to raise the revenue up to those promised benefits, but he is suggesting that instead he would try to bring the promised benefits down closer to the amount of revenue available.
And here, in fact, is that clip, which we just found from my conversation with John McCain at the 2004 Republican convention. This begins with my question.
So when I get a statement every year, you know, most Americans get these statement, very official-looking statements every year from Social Security saying if you stop working now, when you reach 62 or 65, your monthly benefit will be X. Is that a real number?
No. What they should have put is a little asterisk that says, by the way, your taxes that are being paid in the form of Social Security taxes are going out the window as we speak to the present day retirees. Will you help us fix that? That's what it should say.
All right. So there's John McCain, circa 2004, and let's flip back over to the Obama side. The one additional one, privatizing part of Social Security to have younger workers start investing the money themselves. We know, Mike, that John McCain has been for that, correct?
That's right. He has expressed support previously when the Bush administration was for it. He again has been a little more ambiguous lately, talking about whether or not that would be accounts carved out of the current Social Security tax or whether it would be added on to them. But I'm pretty sure in his heart of hearts he's for carving it out of the existing tax.
Okay. Mark Weisbrot, let's go down that same list with respect to Obama. Raising the retirement age. McCain seems back and forth but generally for it, according to Mike. How about Obama? Has he spoken to this?
As far as I know, Obama hasn't said anything except his idea of raising the tax on payroll tax on the upper income groups, as you described. You know, just to say something, I don't think McCain really understands much about the Social Security system at all. He was quoted as saying, Americans have got to understand that we are paying present-day retirees with taxes paid by young workers in America today, and that's a disgrace. It's an absolute disgrace, and it's got to be fixed. Well, you know, that's the way Social Security has been working for more than 70 years now. The taxes we pay go to pay retirees, current retirees. So there's nothing disgraceful in this. It's amazing that he would even say something that shows he doesn't know anything about the system at all. And I think that in terms of these other things, Mike says that we have to worry about 2017. By the way, Mike, you might know this, the Congressional Budget Office just recently came out with numbers that extended the date even further. So it's now 2049, so 41 years before Social Security runs into a problem. Now, Mike wants to push this up to 2017, but he's doing that by basically throwing the trust fund in the trash. And McCain is saying the same thing. The government's been spending your money. That's kind of a trick, you know. When you buy a U.S. government bond, for example, which you can do, the government goes out and spends your money. You know, who knows what they spend it on? They spend it on roads. They spend it on the military. But they spend your money. But then you're also holding a bond, and they pay you back. So to say that Social Security, the money that we are paying in Social Security has been spent, is the same thing as saying that you who bought a bond with your money from the U.S. government, that money is spent and you're not going to see it. Well, in fact, all the bonds that are held by the Social Security Trust Fund are going to be paid back. So that's the date, that's why the Congressional Budget Office says that the system will pay all promised benefits until 2049. And all these scare stories about people not getting their full benefits are really quite ridiculous.
Mike, how about that Congressional Budget Office? How about his view of McCain's lack of knowledge?
Well, I think what John McCain was saying is it's a disgrace that young people are going to get a much lower rate of return than current retirees got. That the deal that people got who retired 10 years ago was pretty good. You got back everything you paid in Social Security with interest and a heck of a lot more. But someone who's young today working is barely going to get back what they paid in, and many of them actually won't live long enough to get back all that they paid in taxes. They'll get a negative return on their money. But I think in terms of this trust fund question, the question isn't whether or not they're going to pay back the bonds. The question is, where are they going to get? It's about $1.9 trillion to repay these bonds. The government doesn't have a bunch of money socked away in a cigar box out behind the Treasury building that it can use to pay that money back. The only place it can get it is by taxing working people in order to pay that money back. That means that we are all going to have to cough up an additional $1.9 trillion. In essence, we're going to pay taxes twice. We paid it once on Social Security. The government then went and spent that money on other things, gave us the bond, and then it's going to tax us again in order to repay the bond.
So your fundamental disagreement continues. Let me just finish ticking off the list of solutions and get Obama's position. So you're saying, I think, Mark, that he hasn't spoken publicly about the idea of raising the retirement age. We know he proposed that increase in the Social Security payroll tax, that he has not said anything about the basic benefit or reducing the annual cost of living increase or taking a position on privatization, or he has come out against privatization.
Yes, and I think McCain voted for the or supported the president's President Bush's attempts to partially privatize. So
yes,
there is
that's
a definite difference there. But no, and I would hope he wouldn't. I mean, you know, Social Security is it keeps the majority of elderly in this country, you know, out of poverty. It's been a very successful program. And again, I don't buy this accounting trickery here. Is Bill Gates going to get his money back for the bonds that he's holding? Is anybody else going to, the mutual funds that hold U.S. Treasury? So Social Security is going to get the money that we paid into it. It just, by law, it's required to invest in U.S. Treasury obligations. If they had invested in the private sector, for example, which would be okay with me, I wouldn't care, then we wouldn't even be having this discussion.
Right. But well, Mike Tanner, given the financial crisis, given the risks that are now apparent to people who may have thought the stock market only goes up, does privatizing part of our Social Security contributions look like a worse idea to you than it did a month ago?
Well, no, actually it doesn't. Now, first of all, we should point out that all of the proposals for Social Security personal accounts were voluntary. People could have chosen to put some of their money in the personal accounts, or they could have remained in the traditional Social Security system. But that said, if you had invested in a personal account in 2001 when President Bush first proposed personal accounts, you'd have made money today. That the market's actually up over where it was when he first proposed it, even with all the volatility in it over the long term. And we're talking about for young people that are investing for 30 or 40 years, the market is still a remarkably safe investment over the long term.
Well, let me go from there on and pretty much on this point to an Obama campaign commercial that attacks John McCain over his position on that.
3 years ago, John McCain campaigned for George Bush's plan to risk your Social Security in the stock market and voted three times in favor of privatizing Social Security. So imagine if McCain and Bush had gotten their way and invested your future retirement benefits at Lehman Brothers. Bankrupt. AIG. Bailed out. Merrill Lynch. Sold. John McCain. The risk is too great. Trying four more years of the same.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
Now, Mark Weisbrod, that ad has been fact-checked, at least to say that Obama was not accurate in saying Bush's plan to privatize your Social Security. Because, as Mike was saying, only people who voluntarily decided to put some of their Social Security into private investments would do so. But anything else you want to say about that or Mike's long view that over, you know, the period of decades or the period when Social Security was first talked about, Social Security privatization was first talked about back earlier in the Bush administration, even with today's meltdown, the stock market has still gone up.
Well, you know, that depends on what years you select, actually. If he's picked the, you know, I don't have the S&P in front of me, but, you know, if you pick a date like right before the 2000 crash, for example, so he moves back a year, I don't think that's true today, especially if you adjust for inflation. So the point is, this is exactly the point that, and that I think the Obama campaign is making, is that Social Security, you know, provides a safe, guaranteed benefit. That if you know, if you just happen to, if you have your money in the stock market, and you just happen to have to retire at the wrong time, you're out of luck, and that's why people rejected. That's why that was a major political defeat for President Bush. You know, the voluntary nature of it. Okay, sure, but you know, you don't have to do that. But the fact is, the way they set it up, the intent of these reforms. And I don't think Mike would even try to deny it, is to basically split people off from the universal system that we have right now. And so eventually what happens is the universal guaranteed benefit becomes a smaller and smaller part of the whole thing, and then you can get rid of the system as we know it.
This is 30 Issues in 30 Days, our presidential election series on WNYC, Issue 12, Social Security and Medicare. My guests are Mark Weisbrot, who is just speaking, from the Center for Economic and Policy Research, and Mike Tanner from the Cato Institute. I want to take our last few minutes to flip from Social Security to Medicare. I think we've got the candidates' positions and some of your disagreements on the quality of those positions out there pretty well for our listeners. And Social Security gets all the headlines, but I always hear Medicare is actually in worse shape. Mark Weisbrot, do you think that's true?
Well, of course it is. I mean, as I said, Social Security is good for 40 years without touching
it. So how
I
about Medicare?
That's not going to last as long, and that's because we need health care reform. So Medicare is basically Medicare costs increase because of the explosion of costs in the private health care system. So the problem is not Medicare and it's not demographics. It's the fact that we have a broken health care system where we pay twice as much as other developed countries per person on health care, and we have worse health outcomes. So those costs have to be brought under control.
Do you agree
it's
with that, Mike?
It's not a Medicare problem. It's a healthcare problem.
Mike Tanner, do you agree that the private sector medical system is causing the problem with the affordability or rising prices, I should say, in Medicare?
Well, I think that certainly rising healthcare costs across the board contribute to the funding problems in Medicare. But Medicare also suffers from a demographic problem. There's more and more people who are elderly who are collecting Medicare benefits. And the amount that comes in out of the payroll tax doesn't come close to meeting its obligations under Part A, and the rest of it is general revenue funded under Part B, and we are going to have serious problems. The unfunded liabilities of Medicare just over the 75-year period are in the $35 trillion range and going to go up from there in the future. Total unfunded liabilities of Medicare are over $70 trillion.
So are you arguing, Mark Weisbrot, that if we go to some kind of universal health care system for people younger than Medicare age, that that's going to make Medicare more affordable rather than put additional pressure on Medicare because that's going to be, you know, even more money going out to cover everybody?
Yeah, these huge numbers that Michael is projecting are based on the idea that health care costs continue to increase at the ridiculously unsustainable rate that they've increased in the past, and that's not going to happen. I mean, we could abolish Medicare entirely, and you'd still have people spending, you know, the country spending 30% of GDP, you know, 25, 30 years out, that, you know, on health care. That's not going to happen. We're going to have health care reform at some point, hopefully soon, and that will bring the costs under control as they've done, again, in the other developed countries in the world that have universal health care.
Mike Tanner, you disagree with that?
Well, they mostly bring health care and costs into control around the world by denying health care. It is relatively inexpensive not to treat you if you get sick. In terms of health outcomes, if you want to look at the outcomes for various diseases, let's take cancer, for example. Just a new article out in the Lancet, the British Medical Journal, showing that five-year survival rates for various types of cancer, the U.S. outpaces the rest of the world by a considerable margin, in large part because we have chosen to invest a great deal in healthcare technology, pharmaceutical products, and other things that aren't necessarily available elsewhere.
So to bring it back to Obama...
Can I answer that?
Well, I don't want to go round and round on it. It's, you know, we will have another debate in this series on what kind of health care reform would be best, and we'll get to more of it then at the end of next week. But President Bush and Congress gave us Medicare Part D, the prescription drug plan, in the last few years. Mike Tanner, do you know if Obama and McCain were both for that?
Senator McCain voted against it. I believe it came to a vote before Senator Obama was in the Senate.
I think that's right. So is Senator McCain proposing to abolish the prescription drug plan for Medicare?
He is not. He is calling for means testing it. He wants to end the subsidies for prescription drugs for families earning more than $150,000 a year.
And do you happen to know, Mark Weisbrot, if Senator Obama is calling for changing Medicare Part D in any way?
No, I haven't seen that.
And the last thing is the Bush administration has also encouraged private Medicare providers, sometimes I gather propping them up even when they're not faring well in the marketplace. What's the success or failure of those plans, Mark Weisbrot? We've got about a minute for this.
Oh, they've definitely failed. I mean, they have a higher cost than the traditional Medicare program, so we're in effect subsidizing the private insurance industry.
And has Obama addressed that? Would he reduce the Medicare privatization programs? Has he said? Do you know?
Well, I don't know, actually. I guess I can't say.
Yeah, okay. And
sure.
Mike Tanner, you can take a bite of that apple before we're out of time.
Yeah, Senator Obama has called for removing the additional subsidies that go to the Medicare Advantage program. Although the costs in those subsidies are largely underwrite the added risk adjustment. They have a tendency to take sicker patients than and be in rural areas where healthcare costs are rising because it's difficult to find the network doctors. So it's a little bit misleading to say they're just higher costs.
Mark Weisbrot, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Mike Tanner, senior fellow at the Cato Institute, author of Leviathan on the Right, How Big Government Conservatism Brought Down the Republican Revolution. Thank you for a really good discussion in our 30 Issues in 30 Days presidential election series on Obama, McCain, and Medicare and Social Security. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming back in a minute with a short call-in for people who are retirement age on how you have changed your retirement plans since you actually reached the age. And we also want to know what has actually surprised you about Social Security and Medicare now that you're on it. How about that, retirees? What surprises you about Social Security and Medicare now that you're actually on it? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Give us a call. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. A couple of quick reminders. As part of our 30 Issues in 30 Days presidential election series, we have our 30 Issues Wiki. It's not just a comments page. It's a way for you to collaborate with each other to help produce six of our 30 Issues programs, suggest guests and questions and audio clips. Our current wiki is oil, coal, and alternative energy. Alternative energy was the number one requested topic by you for this series, and we will do it on Thursday, and you can help us produce it. Check out the 30 Issues wiki at wnyc.org/30issues. And tonight at 8, I will be hosting another pre-debate special. It's Public Radio's Election Reset, we call it. We'll be here live on WNYC and around the country on public radio stations and XM Satellite Radio's public channel if you happen to be driving around. That's tonight at 8, just before the Obama-McCain debate, which we will carry live as well, of course. Now, our phones are already full with retirees to tell us how you have changed or decided maybe to work a little more in retirement than you originally planned, and also to tell us what surprises you about Social Security and Medicare now that you're actually on it. To set this up, here is a clip of Robert Brokamp, a retirement expert from the Motley Fool financial website. He was on the show last week when Amy Eddings was guest hosting, and here is what he thinks may have to happen.
And you might have to delay your retirement a year or two or three, or what we're seeing more of is people partially retired. And I think that's going to be the trend in the future, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. If you factor in part-time retirement into your plan, you can your plan is more sustainable. It gives you something to fall back on, and also keeps you involved in things that you do enjoy about your work. You just don't want to do it full time anymore.
We sound like that might be a whole other segment for us to pursue.
You got it right, Amy. This is that segment. Arlene in Floral Park. You're on WNYC. Hi, Arlene.
Oh, hi. Hi, thank you. I am 72, but I do work part-time. But it's my choice to do that. But I receive Social Security, and I think Social Security is wonderful. It's been great for me, and they're very efficient, the Social Security system.
When you first retired, did you think you would still be working part-time at 72?
Yes, I did, because I liked working.
Uh-huh.
I'm an advanced practice nurse. I really enjoyed working. So I did think I would want to continue working.
Good. All right. Thanks for calling us. Margaret in Morris Plains. You're on WNYC. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. Well, I'm just the biggest fan of Social Security. I was just so pleasantly surprised to find out how well it's run, how efficiently it's run.
Now, what does that mean? Does that just mean your check comes every month, or what does that mean?
No. When you go over there and you say, you know, I'm thinking about retiring, and you sit down with them, and they're so knowledgeable, they take you through the whole process, what you're going to have to do. And then if you do as I did, and I continued working that year, mm-hmm. but I still was getting Social Security, mm-hmm. they keep track of that you have more money coming.
Because you're still contributing to your future benefit.
You're right. Yes. It's, you know, when people badmouth the government, doesn't do anything right. Well, Social Security is right, and they get it right.
Margaret, thank you very much. Frank in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Frank.
Yeah, I'm at retirement age, and I recently went to, though I am not, and I, hello?
Yes, go ahead.
And I recently went to a seminar on Medicaid insurance. And what I found,
Medicare?
Medicare, yes, Medicare.
Medicaid is for poor people. Medicare is for
insurance for retirees involving Medicare.
Uh-huh.
And what I discovered in that the plan is basically an abysmal plan, because if you meet certain criteria of time being ill, there are deductibles of $250 a day that can be as much as $500 and some odd.
So you're surprised that Medicare has so much out-of-pocket expense?
The out-of-pocket expense, depending on one's health, can be huge. It basically deals with catastrophic illness, mm-hmm. and the big catastrophe would be what it does to the retiree if they are ill.
Frank, thank you very much. I'm going to get some other voices on in our short time. Gail, you're on WNYC. Hi, Gail.
Hi. I delayed retirement to 67 so that my benefits would be higher.
Mm-hmm.
And from the beginning, I was incredibly impressed, as two of your earlier callers were, with the efficiency of the program. I said to your fact checker person, it feels as if they've taken sensitivity training. If you know, like they're used to dealing with people who are seniors and who might have some anxiety about things or questions. And I think they just do a wonderful job.
This is definitely the theme of this call in so far, as it's turning out, the efficiency and humanity of the Social Security system.
Absolutely.
How about Medicare? Did you run into that same surprise as Frank, that you're surprised how much comes out of pocket still?
No, not at all. Not at all. I just feel so fortunate to be participating in the system. And
Isn't it like 80-20, where you're still paying 20% of your medical bills, or is it better covered than that? I don't really know.
I believe the coverage is better, and I am in Florida part of the year where, because of the more aging population there, the medical community is used to dealing with seniors and the benefits. You walk in, mm-hmm. no one asks you for anything. You show your Medicare card, you're out. You're in, you're out, and that's it.
Gail, thank you very much. And Phil in Westfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Phil.
Hey, Brian. Great to talk to you. I'm 72, and I just had my hip replaced, believe it or not. One hip was terrible, one hip was great, and Medicare covered it. And $43,000 total, and I think I ended up paying about $3,500 out of pocket. I still owe about $1,300 that I've got to pay. And I might add, I'm on Social Security, and I get a small pension from a place called Lehman Brothers, believe it or not.
You're still getting that pension?
Still paying.
Yay. I think that's insured, isn't it, the pension, if not?
Yes, this was a defined benefit plan from years and years and years ago when I worked there in the 70s.
Well, that's good. And that $3,500 for the hip replacement, you consider that pretty good deal?
I was absolutely amazed. I expected it, you know, was going to have to cost me around $8,000 out of pocket. I had a bone-on-bone situation, which was basically not only was I limping badly, but I could barely walk. When I finally had it done, I've been told.
Phil, thanks for your call. Glad that hip replacement worked out and that you're happy with Medicare. And David in Buchanan, New York, has something that surprised him about Social Security, I think. Hi, David.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
When a spouse retires, we'll just use the husband, and then the wife reaches the age where she could collect Social Security, the wife or the spouse will say, does not have to have paid into Social Security, but they still can collect up to 50% of the spouse's in spouse's Social Security.
Is that only if the working spouse dies?
No, no.
Uh-huh.
And I have a few relatives and friends that fall into that category where they may have earned $5,000 or may have paid in $5,000 over the course of their life and so forth.
So that was a pleasant surprise.
Well, it's not pleasant. That's why it's killing the Social Security fund. Do you know what I'm saying?
Pleasant for the individual, but too much of a drain to pay people who hadn't worked.
Correct.
Hmm.
And then myself, I've been retired for 10 years, and I had gotten stock options, and I paid in on those Social Security like $1,000 every year. But that goes nowhere.
Chris, I guess that payment to the non-working spouse is to give some consideration to how she contributed to, in this case, your income by being the homemaker. And so it's a family income. But, David, we have to leave it there. Thanks to all of your calls on what has surprised you about Social Security and Medicare and your part-time retirements. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Again, don't forget, tonight at 8, I'll be back for our pre-debate program.